Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. I'm glad you're with us today. Our goal is to bring you credible and valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. Central Coast Voices endeavors to address how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community and how we'll look at long-term ramifications of changes in our society. And it's been in my notes that way for a long time, and I have to always add the fact, or in some cases, lack of changes in our society. And maybe to some extent, that may be one of the things that will help us look at today's topic. We're going to talk about how to deal with stress. I'll start this with real quick comment that is one of the most stressful parts of my week is about 2 hours before this program goes on the air, and I'm still working on putting my notes together and wondering whether or not it's going to flow the way I'd like. So we can talk about your stresses, my stresses. We feel stress out of lots of things in life. Stress can have a variety of causes, family problems, issues with employment, hard time in school. One of the ones that seems to get talked about the most is financial and health difficulties. And frankly, even the death of someone either close to you or someone that that you don't know but that's had a ramification in your life. We're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about some of the ways that it manifests itself, insomnia, high blood pressure. There's just a number of ways that stress really affects us on a daily basis, and I have some guests today who hopefully are going to help us understand that, because the way we cope with it sometimes is not in healthy ways. We end up depressed. We end up either eating too much or eating not enough or with heart disease. And we're going to look at both the health ramifications of lowering your stress and what stress really means to a lot of people and some things that you may not have thought about before that we can address stress with. My guests today are Hannah Roberts. She's a licensed clinical psychologist and co-founder of Thrive SLO. And she's a lecturer in the psychology and child development departments at Cal Poly. Katie Boucher, and she is a AMFT, and I'm sorry I didn't ask you specifically what an AMFT was, so why don't you define that?
Associate Marriage and Family Therapist.
Okay, thank you. And she is a support group facilitator with the Cancer Support Center and the Central Coast Treatment Center. And then we have Katie Dutcher, and she is on the phone. She is a founding teacher with the Monterey Bay Meditation Studios, and she's a mindfulness coach at Flourish and Bloom. And we're glad that Katie's with us, of course, for just her expertise, but we're also glad Katie's with us today, or that Katie on the phone from Monterey, since we have two Katies, and I'll probably make that one crazy all day. Is the fact that we don't get that many guests from Monterey County that have the opportunity to be part of the program with us. So we want to discuss this, the importance of stress management, the importance of ways to lower one's stress. You can be part of this discussion if you'd like. We don't want to encourage you to do this if you find it stressful, but you can give us a call at 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. And we can talk about stresses in your life or maybe the insightful way that you have found to make that far less stressful for you than it is for us. And I don't know quite where to begin with this, except for the fact I think what I really want to do is start with Katie on the telephone, because there's a number of things in your presentation and your notes to us about the concept of mindfulness and being a coach for mindfulness. So I think everybody understands and doesn't need a definition of stress, okay? But we all probably need a definition of what mindfulness is.
Sure.
So jump in.
Sure. The one kind of my go-to definition, the one I can remember really easily, is from Jon Kabat-Zinn. And he says mindfulness is paying attention on purpose in the present moment and non-judgmentally. So breaking that down, it's the quality of paying attention, of being present in the moment intentionally. And then that last piece, non-judgmentally, it's just one word, but I kind of think that's the key to the whole thing. It's not just paying attention, but it's how we pay attention. Paying attention kind of with acceptance of what's happening rather than fighting against it. And I think that's also kind of the connection to stress a lot of times stress is coming from our resistance to what's going on.
Yeah. That's fascinating. Having read your notes that you gave us before the program, I had thought of that in a different manner, but in the way you just presented it, the first thing that came to my mind was that I am probably more in the moment when I am with my 2-year-old granddaughter that I only see about once every 3 months. Because when she's in the room and we just get to play and goof off, everything's about just that time together. And the outside world just seems to get shut out. And I suspect that's something that in everyday life, when we don't have those kinds of very positive distractions, that's very hard to put us in that place.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certain times, just like you experienced, where, you know, it's a welcome, it's like a pleasure to pay attention, to be right there in the moment, because it's enjoyable. And I think the difficulty is like these times when, you know, we're having physical pain or when things are not going the way we wanted to, then how can we still be there in the present working with that, even though we didn't want it? That's kind of the challenge.
Okay. So this is is this a new concept? I mean, the gentleman that you quoted is how long ago was this shared with us, if you will?
This isn't a new concept. Jon Kabat-Zinn has been working in the field of mindfulness since at least the late 70s, but then the concept really goes much behind just us talking about the word mindfulness. Really, all kinds of wisdom traditions, from Buddhism to pretty much all wisdom traditions, touch on this. You know, and so so I could say the field of mindfulness is now I'm losing track of time here as I get older. I guess that's like 40 plus years of mindfulness training and research in the U.S., but then a long history before that of study and practice.
Just wait till you're in your 60s.
I bet.
I can say that. I know I'm the oldest person in the room, so, and I'm 67, by the way. Anyway, That's a focus, I'm assuming, from your notes and your background information, gets used a lot in ways people focus on finding meditation as a way to lower stresses and to work with their everyday life. And we'll get into that in a little bit more detail. Katie, who's in the room, mm-hmm. Katie Boucher, you deal a lot with cancer support community, and that's people who in a lot of cases are very stressed out, mm-hmm. or there's things in their lives getting in the way. How do you address stress in that community?
I actually lead some mindfulness groups at Cancer Support Community. And I think to kind of go off what Katie in Monterey is saying, that mindfulness is getting a lot more attention nowadays. You're seeing coloring books in the checkout aisles at the supermarket for mindfulness. And, I personally think it's my favorite coping skill because it's always available to us. You don't have to get your workbook out or your journal out or, the present moment is always accessible. And so to really help our participants kind of check into the present moment with their five senses, looking at what are five things I see in the room, what are four things I hear outside or within the room, things I smell, how does the seat feel underneath me as I'm sitting on this chair? And to practice these skills when you're in a calm state, because when we are in crisis, when we are stressed, it's a lot more challenging. So to be able to, you know, of course, talking about your granddaughter, I think it's those are those moments that we feel very, very present. But to make more intention to practice mindfulness in our everyday, whether it's brushing our teeth or driving to the studio here in the morning and just kind of paying attention to how does the steering wheel feel under my hands? How does the water feel? And then getting rid of the judgment we place on the present moment. We so quickly go to that place with our descriptive language of, oh, that car went really fast by me, and just kind of starting to describe things with more factual, less opinions, just factual, using our five senses. Mm-hmm. And it's a skill that requires practice.
Yeah. Hannah, you're a practicing clinician. So I'm assuming that you deal with a lot of this on a one-on-one basis. When people don't always come to therapy with a problem, but I would suspect a good portion of them are coming to therapy at a time in which there is some undue outside influence in their life, whether or not you want to call it stress or not, that's affecting how happy or how well they're coping with their life. So I don't want this to sound sarcastic. I would assume that everybody who makes an appointment with you as a clinician is probably under stress.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think whether we're talking about depression, we're talking about improving relationships with a partner or a family member, trauma, stress becomes a theme for just about every person I talk to. It plays a role in how we cope in other areas of our life. So definitely that perception of stress seems to really impact whether how someone's able to cope with the other things that are coming up. So it's kind of this underlying current that I think mm-hmm. that almost everyone I work with has, mm-hmm. yeah, that they're facing.
Regardless of my politics or your politics, there is an understanding in the world from people I talk to about this type of topic that we live in a more stressful world that has more conflicts. There's more discussion about whether or not people who are peers in Congress mm-hmm. Get along very well. Somewhat side to this is that Senator John McCain from Arizona, who is a rather conservative Republican and not well, and ran as a presidential candidate against Obama and Joe Biden, mm-hmm. Is also personal friends with Joe Biden, who is probably his most direct political foe in the public arena. And Joe Biden actually went to Arizona last week. It's not a secret that he went to visit his friend, who's not in good health, in Arizona. So people like that who disagree but maintain friendships, I think, do a very good job in some ways of bifurcating those things that causes some stress and conflict in their life from what their personal life is. And I think those two people probably do a better job of that than most of us do. Mm-hmm. But I think that's an interesting, from my perspective, an interesting commentary on the fact that people who are saying, yes, we live in a more politically stressed life. I would suggest, and don't mean this sarcastically, that if you listen to NPR News and don't listen to MSNBC or Fox News on the extremes of the discussion, you may find your life somewhat less stressful. But I don't know if that is a factor or not.
Yeah, it's really interesting because stress, there's studies on stress in America. There's surveys. We nationally survey quite a large sample of the population every year. And stress really spiked in sort of summer, fall 2016. Right. When there were certain things happening politically, but the stress spiked across the nation. It wasn't with one particular political party. It seems that all individuals are experiencing stress. Yes, this year we're continuing to report stress around the state of the nation. Again, on all sides, all different beliefs, different walks of life, and actually all across the country, so different regions. Are all experiencing this stress, and I think you're really coming to a great, like, what to do about it, which is to unite and to find ways to address it. And I think that those are two great role models in that.
Yeah. I think you also hit on a good point of our own internal causes of stress and getting into all or nothing thinking or black and white thinking, rigid thinking, and how that can play a role in our stress. That there's something in the environment external to us that is maybe going to be a stressful situation or experience, and one person is able to cope more effectively than the other. And that has to do a lot with your own meaning attached to that particular event and how you're thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me remind our listeners, this is Central Coast Voices, and we are talking today about stress, how to look at it, how to alleviate it, and how to just maybe even just how to talk about it, which may be in its own for some people a stress reliever and other people a stress mm-hmm. inducer. I'm dealing with Hannah Roberts, Katie Boucher, and Katie Dutcher. And Katie Dutcher is with us on the phone. And my stress is up a little bit trying to discern how to address two different Katies, one of which can't see the conversation. But you're welcome to join the conversation if you'd like to as a listener at 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. So to both the Katies, and this may be a broad assumption on my part, I would suspect in most situations, both of you are dealing with clients, colleagues, however you classify the people that you deal with in your professional relationship, as people who've already to some extent decided that there are things that they can do that are positive towards making their life better, less stressful, more in the moment. And I say it that way in clarification is because I suspect that Hannah's dealing more with people who are looking at the fact that they haven't worked out the skills or not addressing things as healthy as they want to in a lot of cases. So I'm going to start with the healthy side of this. Can both of you kind of share what the nature is of people who come to you for services?
I think that that getting a cancer diagnosis is really big, really traumatic. Things move really quickly. You start going into treatment. You don't have a lot of time to process it. But it does force you to get better with your self-care, your limit setting, tuning into yourself, and setting boundaries. And for a lot of our participants, it's a new challenge, something that they are not used to doing. Maybe they were always the caretaker of their family. And so to kind of take a seat back and to attend to their own basic self-care, saying no to invitations, recognizing their own limits and limitations, and having that acceptance and being mindful of that is huge. And it's something that they, you know, coming into the doors right away are kind of forced to look at. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for me, the courses that I teach and the clients I work with, whether at the community hospital or at Monterey Bay Meditation Studio, it's open to all members of the community. So that means that the people that I work with are just kind of a cross section. There's people who, like you said, kind of have experienced meditation before, but are wanting to know more or want to make it more a regular part of their life. And probably on the other end of the spectrum, there are people who are dealing with either pain or illness or loss, all kinds of things. And sometimes there's not even quite an understanding of what mindfulness is, but just somebody recommended it and they're willing to try anything to see what happens. And with all of that spectrum of people and different experiences, I think what is a common thread, one is that all of us in the room have or are experiencing stressors, whether they're physical or otherwise. And then I think the other thing that is that no matter where somebody is in what they already know or you know, anything like that in terms of the experiences they've had in the past with meditation or other things, as long as they have openness, a kind of a curiosity and a willingness to try something new and see what happens, that is the that's kind of the magic right there, to be willing to try something like sitting still and noticing your breath, or when you're feeling uncomfortable and stressed, instead of distracting yourself or trying to get away from it, mm-hmm. to actually be there with yourself. If somebody's willing to try something new and actually kind of difficult like that, then there's like this opening for something new to happen.
To Katie in Monterey, do people sometimes feel like they increase their vulnerability in an unhealthy way by exploring this and moving in this direction?
Yeah, sometimes. I especially think that because we're used to, you know, anything unpleasant, anything that's stressing us out or causing us physical or emotional, mental distress, we have this, we have this kind of, you know, it's just totally unpleasant. So we have this urge to distract ourselves or get away or kind of build up a wall or clench against it. And we think that that's protecting us, but obviously it isn't, right? We're gonna experience that stuff no matter if we're fighting as hard as we can against it. So, I think there is a sense, especially at the beginning, of if I kind of like surrender to the moment, what's going to happen to me? What, you know, is it going to get worse or something like that? And sometimes there is a sense of, because we're working on awareness, really being aware of what's going on, sometimes there can be a sense that we do notice things more, even like the positive and the negative. It doesn't mean that we're causing it to get worse. It's just we're noticing more what was already there. That's kind of a middle step that's a little difficult. But if you stay with it, then you kind of get a better way of working with those things a little more skillfully than just kind of smothering it down so it just pops up again another time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I suspect it applies to all three of you in the way you deal with your discipline of and your your professional relationships with people, that there's one has to be willing to share or be open to their own vulnerability to be able to address any of this. And let's be realistic, as the only guy in the room, I've got to say that men tend to be far less willing to show vulnerability. I suspect that all three of you probably have an easier time finding, if everything else being equal except gender and lifestyle, I suspect the burly steel worker from Philadelphia or from Pennsylvania is probably less willing to be vulnerable in a therapeutic environment or meditation or dealing with recovery from cancer and sharing how that feels, than a woman who is been raised in an environment where being gentle and somewhat vulnerable was not seen as something you needed to defend against. And I guess probably Hannah, that would be something that would focus more on some of your clients, because there are people who come to see you as a therapeutic environment that may do a very good job of making sure that no one ever knows they're going to a therapist, mm-hmm. because that's just too. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, that type of thing comes up.
Well, that's such an example of how our culture has done a disservice to men. And I mean, I think it is true across the board that we're not comfortable with vulnerability. We're not comfortable with stillness, as Katie was talking about, or with our inner thoughts. But we definitely, for our males, have made that less accessible. I think there's a lot of work being done to reverse that, but it is a challenge. Mm-hmm. The stigma still exists.
Yeah. To Katie Boucher, so you're dealing a lot with people who, a cancer diagnosis and, right. and cancer treatment is knows no bounds as far as gender. So
right.
so you may be dealing with a lot of people who
want
to just say, I'm going to get on with my life and leave me alone and everything's grand because they don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, well, we have a majority of our participants who come into support groups are women, and a lot of them are, you know, patients who got the diagnosis who might be in treatment or out of treatment, and they all have families. You know, they all have loved ones who are providing care, caregivers who aren't, you know, maybe sacrificing their own needs, having some myths associated with, well, I have to be there for this other person, and so my needs aren't as important. Whatever the myth is, if it's for myths in the society around, you know, men don't cry, whatever it is that's preventing you from getting support, I encourage, you know, you to look at that, whoever you are, to really question why you believe that.
Do men that do join your support groups seem more, very much more reluctant to even open up and have the discussion?
No, the ones that come in, you know, they're very open and vulnerable. And
the ones that aren't open are still sitting in their
still
car.
Sitting at home.
And they're not getting out of the car for the meeting. Okay,
yeah.
Understood. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So anyone, you know, we provide free services to anyone whose life's been touched by cancer, family, friends. It's a big event, and you need to be able to talk about it and get it out. And, you know, that's another contributor to stress if you're just internalizing things constantly and you're not having any release or source for releasing that stress.
Katie in Monterey, do you see two different groups of people or two different levels of focus and or willingness to address the vulnerabilities around this in the meditation setting versus the mindfulness coaching setting?
Well, maybe a little bit. I mean, the mindfulness coaching is individual, and so for some people that's a little easier to connect with one person rather than kind of talking or sharing within a group. So it is a little bit of a different setting. But even in the group classes, I'll notice just the kind of differences right there in the class where some people, you know, every class they're kind of contributing something or sharing an example from their life or saying how it's really going for them, you know, maybe every week. And then some people very rarely. And what I tend to do, because I'm also an introvert, and I tend to speak in groups when I really want to and have something to say, and then otherwise, no. So I try to hold space for all of that spectrum, you know, like not really pushing anyone to disclose something if they don't want to. What I feel like is because the class has times of sharing and talking and teaching, and then it has times of meditation, and I feel like even if somebody isn't wanting in that moment to share about their story or something like that, they're still able to benefit from the conversation that's happening with them in the room, and they're still able to benefit from whatever's going on in their mind as they're open to the meditation practices. And I always think about the fact that we don't know what's going on in people's heads, you know, like still waters run deep. All kinds of things can be happening and changing and transforming. And as a teacher, you might never know it, but it could be happening under the surface.
Yeah. Very good point. Thank you very much. Hannah, I want to take this in a little bit different direction. Mm-hmm. And we haven't talked about the fact that you also are an instructor at Cal Poly.
Yeah.
We understand that the strong majors at Cal Poly are agriculture, business, engineering,
architecture, and
I'm wondering, I'm hoping that all the students that take a psychology or development class are not doing it just because it was somehow needed for one for some major. And how when you're talking to people who are between 18 and about 25, who in a lot of cases have, I mean, you're a psychotherapist. You could have horns for all they know and think of in that world. How do those people that are your students begin to get an understanding of what psychology and and that kind of development is all about?
Yeah. No, one of the things I love about, like, my current class, I'm teaching abnormal psychology. And it is such a diverse group of students, a cross-section of all of our majors. And what I can say about the Cal Poly students is they are curious. They are incredibly curious about themselves, and they want to learn anything they can. They want to gobble everything up, which makes it really fun. They also have been operating, for the most part, under sort of using stress as their primary motivator for the last, you know, 4 to 10 years.
So, because you don't get into Cal Poly with lousy test scores, lousy GPAs.
So you talked about the stress you experienced before this, you know, procrastination, and that you were just preparing, like, right beforehand. And I think that's, I joke with my students, they're all professional procrastinators, as am I. And procrastination is actually one of the ways that we increase our stress. Mm-hmm. And stress is a motivator. And so we do spend a lot of time understanding how they motivate themselves, how they understand themselves.
I want to time out for a second. I'll be back because we don't want to lose track. Okay.
Nope.
So the fact that I procrastinate somehow motivates me to be driven more to do whatever I have to do.
Exactly.
Under pressure. Mm-hmm. Okay. So
it's a coping tool.
Yeah. Because I'll confess to the fact that even though in some cases we receive the profiles and information from our guests days in advance. Some of you were a little slow, by the way, but anyway. But days
that
in advance,
me, by
okay.
The way.
But and actually, you were the earlier one. It's okay, Hannah. We won't go there. Anyway, I still tend to spend the morning on Thursday morning compiling all of my notes for the show.
Yeah.
I could do it on Wednesday night, and I actually do well writing and reviewing material in the evening versus the morning. And I also do a very good job of procrastinating to not really get on it as early as I want to on Thursday morning. And I've wondered why that procrastination process isn't just flat out stupid, because it does indeed increase my stress.
It increases your stress. And that's where there's that sweet spot. That's what I always talk to them about.
Oh, it's not a sweet spot.
Right? There's a sweet spot where you procrastinate too long and your stress level is too high.
Oh yeah.
Or you don't procrastinate at all and you're bored. And so you have to find out your own unique sweet spot, I think, in that way. And I think that's the fun of working with Cal Poly students, in that, you know, they're discovering that for themselves, and they can, maybe we'll take it to that other piece of, then suddenly they see themselves as a person who has the ability to maybe perhaps change their view of themselves or their future, when they realize it's not just that I'm a bad student and I procrastinate, but that I can actually use this skill and I can manipulate this tool to a better advantage for myself.
So, Katie in Monterey, if I find a way to integrate meditation into my day, can I find a way to do that to lower my stress and address my procrastination?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I was just talking about this the other day with somebody about teaches college students too. And we were talking about procrastination. I do it too sometimes. And what I notice, like, sometimes I need to plan, you know, for a class I'm going to teach or something like that. And I think of it days before. I think, oh, I really should do that. And if it's something that kind of stresses me out, a lot of times that's the thing that I push away a little bit. And then all of a sudden it's that time, I guess it's the sweet spot where I really need to do it. And I almost think, I wonder what the other two think about this, but I almost think that what happens there, it's like an unconscious trade-off. Because what really is happening that has making me avoid doing it beforehand is I feel scared of it. You know, I feel like stressed out or vulnerable. What's this going to be like? And so I avoid it until the very last moment when all those thoughts of fear go out of my head and I just have to get something down. And it's almost like by procrastinating, I just avoid that whole mess of, you know, am I good enough to figure this out this time or something like that. So I don't think I answered your question, at least not yet. But I know one thing that mindfulness has done for me is let me give me awareness of this process of, like, what's happening when I do this and kind of, like, let me inquire about it. I also see my patterns. I think they do change over time. If I notice, like, oh, this is happening. Why is that happening? And I reflect on it, and I see that happen again and again, and I figure out, like, am I happy with this? Is this serving me to do things in this way, or do I want to try something different? I think that's where the awareness can be really helpful, or the mindfulness training can be helpful. It can let me take a pause and kind of think, be aware of what I'm doing and how it's affecting me, and then just choose what might be more beneficial.
And for the average person who doesn't find a motivation to deal with any one in the three disciplines that we're looking at here, what are some of the self tools that are available? And I'll just throw that open to all three of you, because as I'm listening to this thing, this is really great, but I've been motivated to learn a lot of things. I've been motivated to go to a therapist before. I've been motivated to just go walk, because if I walk in a nice, peaceful environment, it'll just be more in the moment. But there's a tremendous number of if everybody in a given area were addressing this with people with the skills that the three of you have, we'd need 20 times as many of you to make it work. So the average person who's listening to the program, the average person on a daily basis, is looking at ways to address these kind of concerns with what I'd have to say, for lack of a better word, is a form of self-medication. So what are your observations for that individual to look at these things in their life? Somebody jump in.
Well, I was just going to go off what Katie said about the awareness piece. I definitely was a really shy person. I couldn't have seen myself do, you know, a live radio show in the past. And I definitely could have, you know, I was invited last minute yesterday, and I could have, you know, been in that place of fear and said no, or I could have, after saying yes, catastrophized what would go wrong and losing sleep and going down that rabbit hole all night long, or just kind of bringing it back, being aware of where my pattern can go, and then bringing it back to, okay, now how does the pillow feel underneath my face as I'm trying to fall asleep? How is my breath right now? How is my posture? You know, how does the blanket feel on top of me? And also just self-care being that foundation that reduces our vulnerability to stress. If we're treating our physical illnesses, if we're getting balanced sleep and nutrition, and we're having joyful movement and medication management, you know, that's that basic self-care. The advanced self-care being assertively communicating our needs to other people, practicing setting limits and boundaries, and, you know, really kind of attuning our own limits, paying attention to and awareness of what we need in every given situation.
Mm-hmm. Katie in Monterey, from my own experience, I can identify with both of the guests in the studio, because I've been a cancer survivor and I've addressed some of those things, and I've actually been in a therapeutic environment. The flip side is, I can tell you, I have never taken the time to really learn how to fit meditation into my life. And for those most people who know me, they would probably say, you can't fit that in your life because you won't shut up long enough to not be talking or having a conversation with someone that does that. So you can address this at me, but I think that would probably affect a lot of our audience also, and that is how the boundary of, gee, settling down and meditating seems way that that's I think I could learn to play the violin mm-hmm. before I could figure out how to settle down and meditate. So I'm not quite sure how that fits.
I'm really loving that you're bringing this to a personal, because it's easy. It's easier to
I'm notorious for self-abuse on the radio. It's okay. Yeah.
I mean, where I would say to start. So I think a lot of people, when they hear about meditation, they think of something that's really long and maybe unapproachable, intimidating. And I think to really start small, because it every little moment can matter, can make a difference. So what I would say to someone or to you is the first thing would be just to, when you talk about finding time, I think that there are these moments. So one obvious one might be when you really notice that you're feeling stressed. That's a good moment of choice there to maybe just take three breaths, right? Like three breaths is anyone can do that, and just to feel what happens when you do that. Is that going to fix everything? Maybe not, but it'll give you a moment to kind of collect yourself. So that's one thing I would try. And actually, just any time you can take a few conscious breaths, you can think of that as a mini meditation. And then the other thing would be that I try to do, especially on a busy day, is really note. Like there are moments, usually there are those moments where you reach for your phone, you know, where you're waiting, or there's a transition between one thing to the next and you don't quite know what to do. And so you pick up your phone to fill time. So if you notice that there's those moments to fill time, see what happens if you do nothing. Like, maybe just sit right where you are and look around. As I think Katie was saying, you know, feel your feet on the ground. Feel that there's a chair or something stable underneath you. Just taking little moments like that can really add up. I think of it like, mm-hmm. you know, like a necklace or something where, you know, it's one and then another moment later and another, and it does stack up. It does have an effect. So people don't have to think, oh, I can't meditate for an hour, so I can't do anything. It's like I think Hannah said, it's not black or white. It's just finding these little moments, finding like little times to shift or take pause.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, it can, I get that all the time. It's like, how am I supposed to, that's so overwhelming. I can't meditate. I don't have the time to meditate. Thinking of that, you know, is stressful or whatever it is. But to practice doing it in something you already do every day. If you're already driving to work every day, if you're brushing your teeth every day, to engage your five senses and just kind of pay attention and kind of be present and to your breath and the physical sensations. By incorporating it during everyday activities when you're calm, it's just going to make it easier to access that skill when you're in times of stress and crisis.
So, and again, I don't mean this to sound sarcastic, so I'm prefacing it with that. I suspect if one doesn't learn these, one helps Hannah's patient load go up.
That's not our goal.
Prevention.
You're talking about prevention.
Prevention, because there may be people who come to see you as a therapist that – don't need therapy as much as they just need someone to tug on them and explain to them how to settle down.
Mm-hmm. Sort of to bring them back to ground.
Grounding, yeah, because right. That's a word we haven't used much here, but mm-hmm. in my generation it was very mm-hmm. common.
Grounding. Mm-hmm.
Regrounding where you are.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and I think, I feel like mindfulness is the grounding of this generation, mm-hmm. definitely. Yeah, just and I think that's the other piece, is there's this perception, and Katie have kind of talked about it, but mm-hmm. right, that of I have to empty myself, or I have to be totally blank, And they've both mentioned this, but I think I love that, that using your senses is the best way for you to ground. And it's really almost every mindful strategy involves that. So attention to your breath, attention to what you're looking at. The one thing I'll throw in that we haven't talked a ton about is nature, and how calmed we are by the color blue or green, and how calmed we are by looking at the ocean or at the sky. And so that's just, for me, that's my favorite sort of way to apply mindfulness, is to use my visual senses, or actually all of my senses, and to experience nature. I feel like that's kind of the double, you know, it's like an extra bonus, to be in nature and to experience nature. And it's not like I have to be doing this deep practice, you know, like, multiple hours. I can just take a moment and notice, you know, notice the color of the sky or the shape of the clouds or the sounds of nature. Mm-hmm. And I find that really helpful.
And I think if I can just add that how this connects so much to being under stress is that when we're under stress, you know, we always hear about fight, flight, freeze, that kind of thing. And it's really, it's almost, actually, it is like our vision kind of, or our awareness gets really limited. Like when we're under stress, it's like we kind of go, like everything shuts down, but just our, like, what do I need to do to survive? And so when we keep saying, like, coming to your senses, feeling what's right there, it might sound silly, but what we're doing is we're kind of intentionally broadening back out, because that's what we need. We need under stress to be able to access all of our resources, not just be so kind of small and clenched. So those sensings of what's around us and all of that is about broadening out again, and kind of like giving ourselves time to sort of come back online.
I think everybody's what motivates different people, or what channels their energy in that way. I mean, I think what Hannah was saying, yes, I think just walking in a really overgrown rainforest type area is what is best for me. I have a neighbor that I believe he owns 7 different small sailboats. For his life, he needs all of those, believe it or not. But for him, I would find being out on a small sailboat to be interesting, but not very relaxing, because
maybe a little stressful.
Yeah, a little stressful. But being in, you know, walking through a rainforest. So everybody has their own tools that work for that. It's a conversation we've had before, in my family at least, and that is, I tend to not be a very good spectator. I tend to be more of a participant, and there are members of my family that will tell you that they believe my needing to participate raises my stress level. But I think the flip side is, if I were just watching something that I could help with otherwise, or a conversation I can be part of, is actually probably less stressful for me than just being a spectator. So everybody has their ways of fitting things into their life, which brings me to kind of an aha moment here for Hannah. And that is, I suspect that just having that awareness for a lot of people who are working with you in a therapeutic environment, becomes a matter of learning what they can be doing to self-address what's going on in their lives, as opposed to relying on someone else to enlighten them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, like, that is where all of the current stress research is going, right? It's what our narrative is about it. And so if I tell myself I'm helpless, I can't handle this, I can't deal with the situation, stress is bad, I'm in a terrible place, I'm going to give myself an illness, that, of course, is going to be bad stress. Mm-hmm. But if you can start to look at, okay, well, what are my choices and where do I have control and how can I look at this differently and can I turn this into a positive? And actually, another one we haven't talked about is, how can I connect with someone about this? Mm-hmm. Like, those are all just amazing stress reducers. And so it's so much in your own personal story about how you look at things.
Yeah, it's my wife and I hold hands all the time. And literally, that becomes a very be here in the moment type experience. Yeah. I mean, it's, I'm, again, I'm a Taurus married to a Scorpio, and probably some of the most peaceful moments in our life is just walking down, you know, walking out, taking a walk in the morning, holding hands, because it just it grounds you and it relaxes you. And I suspect for all three of you, a good portion of what you may spend your time doing is teaching people to use the skills they already have that they're pretty sure they don't have.
Or reminding them of them. Yeah.
It's the word, and it shows up in the notes that I got from all three of you, and that is the concept of self-care becomes a key factor, I think, because you know, I mentioned it before, but people have to rely on themselves for as much of this. They work with people like the three of you to get a better understanding and learn the skills they need. But we have 24 hours a day, and you can't do 24 hours a day with one individual all the time. So it becomes something to balance out. As most of our listeners know, what I generally do is try and make sure for the last few minutes of the program, I get out of the way because I can, as everyone knows, including the management at KCBX, I talk too much, and give you all a chance to pretty much take a couple of minutes, cover what you think we may have not covered or that you want to make sure people leave with, the takeaways for them. And Katie, I'm going to start with Katie in Monterey. So you have your 2 minutes.
Thank you. Well, I just to tie back to what you were just saying, I think it's so interesting that point you brought up right there at the end about there's like there's a part of it that is really empowered in that like we do have power in ourselves to change the way we behave and respond toward things, and at the same time we don't have to do it alone. And so that power of connection there, and then the other part too is that. Just recognizing that connection is important because everyone deals with stress. And I think that's what I would probably say is like the main takeaway is that if somebody's experiencing stress or you know, extreme anxiety, things like that, that the whole reason there would be a show on this is because you're not alone in dealing with it, that it's really all of us. And so letting it not have to be a secret, because as soon as you let go of that shame, all of a sudden, all these doors open for how can we do something different? So kindness to yourself and openness. At our studio here in Monterey, I know it's far for some of your people who are listening, but we're a place for community. And so that that's what I would say to many people, even if it's just one person, finding some community and a place where you can feel okay being vulnerable. It doesn't have to be a big group, but that's a great first step.
Terrific. Thank you. Katie?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think, it's important to know that everybody experiences stress. We can change how we respond to stress. You know, we may not be able to control every automatic thought that we have that comes into our head. We may not be able to control every external situation and environment and experience that comes into our path, but we can reduce our vulnerability to life stressors. We can practice self-care and limit setting. That's foundational components of stress reduction. And mindfulness is that skill that is always available to us. You know, if you catch, you can be mindful that your thoughts are going to the future or that they are critical or whatever the thought may be. You can be mindful of that and not judge yourself for just being human, reminding yourself that we're all in this together. We all experience stress. And to practice mindfulness and that increasing our awareness every day in our regular activities to help further reduce our vulnerability when, an inevitable, painful event or stressful situation comes into our path.
Very good point. Thank you. Hannah.
I'll echo everything Katie and Katie have said. Maybe I'll add on. Let's work on creating a supportive culture within our community. where I so frequently hear how much glorification of stress comes up in our world. I'm working this hard. How hard are you working? What do you do? Right? Everything in our language implies, you know, do more, so much so. And so I think I would implore all of us to spend a little more time. How are you taking care of yourself? What did you do for yourself today? That's actually how I start off my class. How did you take care of yourself over the weekend? Mm-hmm. What did you do to really help yourself be a better human, not so much to study more or work harder or any of those kinds of things?
We're human beings. We're not human doings.
Exactly. Yeah. Breathe more and get outside more. Yeah.
In any, since we have the time, any particular tools that you find pretty much work across all people who come to you for, in a therapeutic environment that seems to be one of the things that for most people is lacking in their skill set that brings them to a therapeutic environment?
Just like one tool?
Yeah.
I would come back to breath work, I think. You know, we've hinted at it so many times, but just like a deep breath, like belly breathing, using your diaphragm, deep breath in for the count of four, out for the count of four. I think like nobody's breathing enough. Mm-hmm. And that actually it changes your brain chemistry so much. I would start there.
And slowing down, just slowing down, you know.
I'll interject this because there's a couple of seconds to take here with it. I think that probably what I see in our society is one of the most prominent concerning indicators of stress for me is how many people are constantly tailgating on the freeway. And when I pull over to get out of the way for some of those people, they don't really go any faster. They don't want to get around me. They just end up on your bumper because it's like just pushing pushing all the time. Anyway, thank you to all three of you. I appreciate
thank
it.
You.
It's been,
thank
a,
you.
Been a delightful
Thanks
hour.
So much.
I appreciate it. I've got a few parting comments here for folks and want to let you know that, of course, if you're a regular listener, Chris Kington Barker and I swap weeks on this show, and Chris will be with you next week. And it's going to be celebrating mothers. Central Coast Voices will be celebrating Mother's Day. And Chris is going to be celebrating moms, motherhood, and maternal bonds, and parenting. And she's going to have an interesting group of people. And basically, she's going to have a real cross-section of special mothers on the Central Coast that are going to get together and talk about strength and love and understanding and patience and compassion and courage. As they look at basically how to be a selfless mom. And I hope that men will listen too, because if we can learn from the moms how to be more selfless, we'll be better dads and less stressed human beings too, which fits in with the program today too. So listen for Chris next week in commemoration of Mother's Day, which if you hadn't noticed is coming up on the 13th of May. And want to let you know that Central Coast Voices, as I've told you before, is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, a project of KCBX Community Foundation. Thank you to Joan Gellert Sargent for underwriting our program on a regular basis. You can reach us at voices@kcbx.org or give us a call at 543-2323. Thank you for KCBX Radio co-producing this program for us and letting us bring it together. And to my guests today, Dr. Hannah Roberts, Katie Boucher, and Katie Dutcher, and I appreciate you being with us. And This American Life is coming up next.